Hello and welcome back to Illumination, the Disney Lorcana podcast. My name's Max.
And I'm Sam.
For this episode, episode 40, Sam, I have bad news.
What is it?
We lost the die roll.
Oh no.
We are going to have to go second in this game. This is our on the draw episode. We are going to talk over some things that change when you are not the one going first during a game of Disney Lorcana. So we're going to start off by talking about ways to randomize this, how you should be altering your hand, talking about what cards get worse when you're going second, and what cards get better when you're going second and help get you back into a game when you are behind on tempo. So we're going to go over all of that on this episode. Talking about ways to randomize going first, typically you're going to roll 2d6 and usually the high roll will go first. Some people do not like this. There is some contention around rolling dice for high or low roll. Sam, have you had to do anything differently than high or low roll yet while you've been playing Lorcana?
I haven't had to do anything differently, but I did hear somebody joking around last weekend, do rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. In other games, there are cards that they've printed that kind of let you like pick one. There's like Magic has paper tiger, scissors lizard, and rock lobster, and you can pick one and then whatever one wins can go first. Very common amongst people, if you're not going to high roll or low roll, is one person will roll the dice, the other person will call odds or evens. If you call it correctly, you go first. If you call it wrong, the player who rolled the dice gets to go first. This is generally used for a couple of reasons. One, it prevents re-rolling, which is a minimal thing, but it can eat up a little bit of time. If you're both on slower matches and you both chit-chat for a minute, be polite, then you both roll, oh, both got a 7, re-roll again, oh, both got a 9, and now all of a sudden, between our pleasantries and the die roll, we've eaten up a minute or two of our time clock, which can be the difference between winning and drawing a game. So, important thing to think about, the odd-even helps prevent that. It also is just one set of dice that are being rolled, and the person rolling them cannot predict what you're going to call, so it prevents the concept of a, quote, loaded dice. Much cleaner, much easier, it cleans things up pretty nicely. I've done an odd or even, I think, twice playing Lorcana, but much more playing Magic just because I've played much more Magic. The important thing is that it's fair and it's random. Moving on to altering your hand when it comes to being on the draw. Sam, what do you think about when you're altering your hand?
Especially depending on what deck I'm playing. I think there are decks that you definitely need some specific cards when you're on the play versus on the draw. So I think I look for more cards that we'll discuss later that do better on the draws to help you get back into the game, to help alleviate that play draw discrepancy.
That makes sense. So what you're saying is cards that help you come back from behind, cards that add tempo or add board presence, are generally cards in a very general sense that you want to keep.
Yeah.
You'll have two different game plans. One will be a sacrificing a little bit of your deck's quote unquote game plan to keep cards that will stop your opponent from enacting their game plan. So that's really important. A good example of this can be found in the emerald color. There's a significant difference between on the play wanting a cursed merfolk and on the draw electing to either skip your one drop altogether or play something like the one drop Diablo Obedient Raven so that when it gets banished, you draw a card. So bare minimum, you're not losing too much. Also, people do elect sometimes on the draw to play something like Little Baby Pegasus so that it's evasive and it's more of a chance it doesn't get knocked out by the opponent's first character play of the game. So those are things that definitely both only quest for one. They're far less powerful than something like Cursed Merfolk. But if your opponent is playing Amber Steel, for example, and they lead on Cinderella and you just lose your Merfolk, that's a huge tempo loss versus where if you at least are losing Diablo, you're drawing a card or you're skipping your one drop altogether, conceding the fact that you're not going to be the aggressive player this game and you are going to instead elect to play 2-1 drops maybe on turn two.
I was gonna say, that's one of my favorite things to do is play 2-1 drops on turn two when I'm on the draw.
Absolutely. Or you can scan their hand with an Ursula, see what's going on, and then your follow-up could be something like Flynn Rider, Charming Rogue, plus that Cursed Merfolk, plus that Diablo. There are a lot of options for changing your game plan around, right? Certain cards definitely become better. Certain cards definitely become worse. Other decks don't have a great way to navigate. They're not as fluid. Amethyst, you'll see a lot of fluidity in. Emerald decks tend to see that fluidity as well, where you're just kind of changing your game plan completely. Cards like Ursula Deceiver, cards like we mentioned a moment ago, Cursed Merfolk versus something a little bit more flexible, tend to make your game plan a little bit less proactive and more reactive. Some decks don't have that ability. Some decks, like, that are more hyper aggressively strategizing, will lean into, you know what, I'm just going to maximize pressure. So that same Amber Steel deck, while it might want Cinderella on the play, for example, might lean on something like Daisy Duck, Donald's Date, on the draw, because it's just a more aggressive card. I'm just going to make my opponent figure it out. So there's kind of two general ways to play that, right? Like, some decks just can't eschew their really good opening line. Their opening lines are just some of the strongest in the game. We see this a lot with the Sapphire decks. They want to ramp on two, whether they're on the play or on the draw. I would dare say maybe a smidge more on the draw, because they definitely want to stay in the game. Sometimes you're on a deck where you just can't afford to mitigate those things. You could just have to go for the best possible assemblage of cards that you can play. Like, these are the strongest cards. This is the best opening line. I just want it as close to 100% of the time as possible, irrespective of if I'm on the play or on the draw. So it's really about practicing, right? We talk about this constantly, testing on the podcast. You have to figure out what the heck of the deck is supposed to be doing. It's taken a lot of people a lot of time and testing to understand when you're playing on the draw, you want this grouping of cards, or you want to go with this particular curve, versus when you're on the play, you want to do something maybe a little bit more ideal or a little bit more proactive. Depends on the deck. So you really have to think it through, and also kind of snowballs if you know what your opponent's playing or not when you're on the draw. If you don't know and you're just in the blind, I have no idea what they are doing. You can make a guess. You can try to double down. I have definitely taken the I'm going to guess what my opponent is on and been so far from correct.
Yeah.
And punished because of it.
Mm-hmm.
I will rarely lean heavily into my intuition or just like basing it on what I've seen this person play in the past. But sometimes when you see the local crew and you're just like, okay, this person's a blue-red player.
Right.
I'm going to try to keep as if they're playing blue-red. And they're like, nope, never mind. I'm actually on like purple, amber, hyper aggro. And you're just like, oh no, things have gone terribly for me because I have kept cards that are better in a late game. It can happen. So you're trying to make your best guess. And these are all reasons why when you add it all up, we tend to see that what Sam described earlier is that play draw discrepancy when you get percentage points for being on the play, because Lorcana is so predicated on your opening moves. In a similar fashion to chess, the opening stages of the game are very critical to trying to set up the mid and late games. So not knowing what's going on, it forces you to do the most either thinning or kind of diluting your hand, where it's like, I'll keep a couple of things that are good and hope that I draw more of those things as the game progresses, but I'll keep one or two things that help me early, one or two things that if they're a slower deck I can play, and I'll just ink appropriately. Essentially, like, keeping five real cards and conceding the fact that I'll be inking two of these cards in whatever direction my opponent is playing. That's a strategy as well. There's a lot of thought that goes into it, and I think the more mid-range your strategy is, the more you're stuck trying to figure out, how the heck do I mulligan for the best chance of winning when I am on the draw? So let's talk a little bit about that. Some cards in each ink identity that lose a little bit of advantage when you're on the draw. We'll start with Amber. We already mentioned one of them. That's Cinderella, Ballroom Sensation. Cinderella is almost, if not one of the best singular cards, not counting a Diablo Shift, not counting a bell off of a popsicle, just one of the singularly most powerful opening cards you can play, just one singular cardboard rectangle.
Yep.
She represents a litany of disastrous things that can happen to you. You either have to call your opponent and hope that they were bluffing, but if you're wrong, you're in trouble. Or if you're too scared to put something on the board, they just get to quest and you eventually know you're going to have to call them. But you'd like to do it maybe in a spot that's a little bit more advantageous for you to kind of pick that battle.
Either, like we said earlier, you skip your turn one play or you play cards that will survive her singing a three cost song.
Right. Sometimes you'll elect to build your deck in such a way that you're playing a heavier amount of 1/3s for 1 because you want to survive that first initial Let the Storm Rage On shot. So you'll see this when Emerald Steel or Amber Steel are heavier players in the meta. A card like Cinderella definitely has the hallmarks of that. And similarly, I guess on the other side of the Amber coin is something like Lilo Making a Wish.
Mm-hmm.
Insanely powerful because you know you're going to get a quest off most of the time before Lilo gets answered. And if your opponent doesn't have that one drop, you might even be able to get two quests off with that Lilo, which is backbreaking. The odds of you being able to quest more than once with that Lilo, you may not be able to quest at all. If that Lilo comes out, if the only one drop in your hand and your opponent plays Cinderella and passes, you're like, oh no. Yeah. Oh no. What do I do now?
It's not even inkable.
Right. It's not inkable. Like, you just throw it down and close your eyes and just hope that you're not just wasting an entire card for essentially half of a card, right? Because Let the Storm Rage On will replace itself. So that's kind of a disaster. Puts you way behind, both in terms of cards in hand, the opponent's evened out cards with you being on the play, and you haven't gotten to leverage those cards using the best advantage of the extra card you were drawn. So that's a disaster. Amethyst. We see kind of two cards that are very similar on this list. Chernabog's Followers and, of course, the Magic Broom. They both, again, suffer from the same problem where if they get put down, they may not get to do their cantrip where you don't get to replace them with a card, which can be really rough sometimes on the draw. However, you can leverage these cards a little bit because you're not leaning as hard on them to draw you a card. Sometimes you can just be like, you know what? I'm going to smash with my Chernabog's Followers because mm-hmm. I don't care. I'm already up a card. My opponent's down a card. So I'm willing to go one for one trade. Because remember, if I'm at an 8 cards, because I went second, my opponent's on 7 cards because they went first, and we trade 1 for 1, I'm still up a card. In the scenario where Let the Storm Rage On comes down, I'm no longer up that card. I've now conceded that card to my opponent. They not only got to resource and add to the board first, they also are now at card parity with me. And that is a disaster. I need to do everything I can to make that card count, right? I need that card to help get me back into the game. That's why you draw typically in trading card games when you go second. Emerald, we talked a lot about these already. Curse Merfolk and Ursula, Deceiver of All, both cards that when you play it on time behind, you risk your opponent having a card that can just immediately answer them and let them do nothing. And that, again, is the hallmark of a disaster. And you'll note a lot of these cards have the similar problem of they come down and don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Flynn Rider, Frenemy. We don't even see Flynn Rider getting played right now because it's such a disaster against the steal strategies. I play Cinderella, pass. I play Flynn Rider, pass. Sing this song, damn. Yeah. I've lost all kinds of advantage. We see this in Sapphire with McDuck Manor. This card, oftentimes, you're not going to be able to just slam it down on 4 if your opponent is a little slower because they're, again, they've gotten to add to the board first. You can use it certainly to buy yourself a turn or two to try to get back into the game and force them to exchange essentially some quests and give up lore advantage to try to take out your manor. So I'm not saying it's awful. I just think it is a slight step worse on the draw. And then in Steel, we have good old one drop Captain Hook, Forceful Duelist. Looks great when you're on the play, but mm-hmm. on the draw, sometimes just like, goody, my opponent can answer this and still quest, or yeah. they can just set up to ignore it or respond to it, where if they lose the unit, they can immediately just take it out very easily with something like a Calhoun, for example. So these cards tend to lose you that advantage, giving the opponent the chance to take down an entire card from you without necessarily giving up a card on their own, which means that, again, you've lost the advantage of drawing an extra card. And when that happens, your opponent is now entirely advantaged because they got to ink and play cards first. They always are one ink up on you. Obviously, towards the mid and late game, they might not be inking every turn, but in the early stages of the game in Lurkhan, at least the first 3 turns, typically, we're going to see a player inking in order to play cards.
It's bad if they don't.
Right. Something's going disastrously wrong, or I don't know what kind of strategy they're playing, if that's intentional there, but you never know. So let's flip the script a little bit and talk about cards that get us back into the game in these colors. So let's talk first about Amber. Amber has seen an uptick recently, yeah, right?
Got a couple new cards.
In the set 8 meta, it's definitely seen more popularity, especially the non-Whole New World variants, than we've ever seen before. And it's no surprise that 2 of the best cards for Amber on the play are on the draw to get back into the game. Something like Rhino. We've seen Rhino now just define the on the draw line of playing the 1/16th wolf into the power hamster. Crazy. Just crazy powerful. And then Lady Family Dog being able to just dump your hand before mm-hmm. they can start to leverage discard, just forcing you add more units to the board quickly than your opponent can answer. So you get to respond very quickly and kind of lessen that tempo advantage. And of course, we have Daisy Duck, one of the best cards for Amber on the draw because of those stats. Yep. Even giving your opponent extra cards, right? Again, we talked about how bad it is to give up card advantage. Daisy's so powerful that it's like, yeah, I'll give up card advantage for 6/8 lore. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
Amethyst has some cards that all look very similar. I can tell you they all cost 3. And you probably have already thought of them. We have Madame M. Fox, of course. And she wouldn't be complete without her best buddy in crime, Merlin Crab. And adding to the menagerie on terrible things you can see out of Amethyst on 3 has become Peter Pan, Shadowfinder. The blight of anyone who does not play many evasives in their deck, where this card can just shoot you from the skies, meanwhile just singing Friends on the Other Side, thumbing their nose at you.
Easily take out a Diablo.
Takes out Diablos. It gives gigantic 4 drops the ability to come rushing in and answer a board. It just, it so cleanly answers so many things. And in concert with things like Crab, it just gets even worse, even quicker. Emerald, we have Wrong Lever, of course. This card has become the blight of many people who want to answer things with non-rush evasive characters. If you're playing Diablos, we've seen this in a lot of the Emerald Amethyst strategies, whether you're playing tempo or you're playing the Diablo style discard deck. The newcomer to the party as well, Lewis, our favorite crocodile buddy, coming in, giving something reckless and usually just devouring it in the process, or making them jump through hoops to not lose that and then taking more time, which gives you more setup. And then of course we have everybody's favorite 2-drop in Emerald, which is Ursula Deceiver. Just happy taking cards out of an opponent's hand who has less cards to begin with is always really nice. So there's some strong ones there. Ruby, of course, the 3-drop Sisu that comes down as is evasive and can take care of something with 1 or less strength. That's a great way to take care of something the following turn, hit something in the air with like a pump from a Vitalisphere, or in 2 turns or less shift into the Empowered Sibling and just wipe the opponent's board completely. Since the beginning of the game, the very first chapter, we of course have Maui, Hero to All. This card just comes down and can usually take 2 to 3 cards with it, no problem. And of course, not too dissimilar, the blight of everybody who has an opponent at 18, Super Goof, coming down and challenging and gaining 2 lore. These are ways to get back into a game effectively and keep a body on board, drop your opponent down 1. So all very strong. In Sapphire, we talked about this earlier, we have Teepo and Sail being the 2-drop rampers that help you get ahead, going from 2 to 4. Powerful, the context that Blurple is founded on is going from 2 to 4. It's just the strength of that strategy. A newcomer to the party, Bell, Apprentice Inventor, just a blight to anybody who has small characters, acting like a giant roadblock or a fine singer. So both of those very, very good on the draw to help get you back into a game. And Steel, no slouch when it comes to these cards either. We, of course, have the Deadly Calhoun. We've talked about that card already. We have, kind of related in the Amethyst Steel world, we have the Giant Cobra that can really help. Gigantic body that comes down ahead of schedule and puts you ahead on lore. Oof.
And takes advantage of the extra card you have in hand.
Yes. And I think the card, and I saved this to the end intentionally, is kind of a card that ties the whole discussion together, is underplayed right now, but might see a tick up in play because I do believe it doesn't rotate, is Steel Action Twin Fire. So this is a 2-cost uninkable action that deals 2 damage to a chosen character, or if you also choose to discard a card, it deals 2 damage to a different chosen character. So on the play, you can shoot 1 thing. Likely that would be the case, right? You're just only going to need to shoot 1 thing. But on the draw, you can take your opponent's board from 2 characters to none through utilizing that gasp extra card that we got for going 2nd. So that is a really huge benefit that Twin Fire gets. And I think that this card is kind of a good way to think about a card that helps you on the draw and its most stripped down sense. It really just lets you leverage a card that you have that's extra. So it puts you at parity and can put your opponent down 2 cards on board. So now you've gone down 2 cards to make your opponent go down 2 cards. And now they have lost as strong of a board board advantage, and you maybe discarded a card that was irrelevant in the matchup or wasn't going to be an impact until much later in the game. Just an uninkable that was clogging up your hand. We've all had those double dock hands, right? Just lets you leverage and get through some of the chuff in your deck in a really effective way, and can help you, again, turn what is an overwhelming board early into a parity state just off the back of one card, leveraging that card. Definitely all awesome cards. I just want to give a shout out to our awesome community on Discord who gave us a lot of these suggestions. We really appreciate it. Honorable mentions are the beloved Sticky Mickey, hard to remove. Everybody's favorite bumbling mate, Mr. Smee, just one of the best two drops of all time. Any 1/3 we haven't previously called out, and Kit Cloud Kicker Tough Guy. So those cards all feel pretty good on the draw. Cloud Kicker is insane on the play if you're playing Amethyst Emerald Tempo, but is fine enough on the draw, right? Delay that Diablo long enough, you can get a genie down and then answer the Diablo permanently is a great strategy to deal with something in a color combination that doesn't have direct answers, I guess up until wrong lever, because goodness, that's a real card. So these cards get your opponent to slow the game down a little bit while you generally can add to the board and keep things on board or leverage the cards to keep your opponent down or controlled on resources, and then allow you to kind of ratchet momentum back and start to take over the game, which will allow you to win the game by this simple premise.
Keep questing.